At this point, we are 1 week away from the election, and an ABC poll shows Hillary Clinton 1 point ahead of Donald Trump with a 3-point margin of error. That phrase, margin of error, is one we hear a lot during election season. We hear it so much, we often don't even notice it anymore. And yet many people don't really understand what it is. And that means it's time to break it down.
Ooh, break it down, baby, because I want y'all all to know. Let me break it down for you again.
Break it down now.
In order to explain the margin of error, I first need to outline a few basic facts. We are talking about statistics here. Statistics is a specific kind of math.
In plain English, I concatenate diverse statistical information to maximize the potential utilization of data.
It's designed to take a huge amount of data and then interpret that data to draw conclusions. So if you've ever said something like, I drink about 2 cups of coffee every day, you have used statistics. The exact amount of coffee you drink on a daily basis over a period of months or years has been collected by your brain and then boiled down to an average, 2 cups a day.
Dude, I'd be a mess if I had to give up my Joe. I have a full-blown addiction.
People use statistics in business and sports and music and science in nearly every part of society. Statistics helps us learn from data, usually really large data sets. And that includes how people think they might vote in an election. The very first political poll we know of happened in 1824. It showed Andrew Jackson was way ahead of John Quincy Adams in the race for the presidency.
I see a new nation ready to take its place in the world. Not an empire, but a republic.
But that was a straw poll. That means it was informal. People just asked a group of people what they thought and then added up the results. That's called a straw poll after the practice among farmers of tossing a handful of straw into the air to see which way the wind is blowing. Straw polls are not very accurate, and it was the fantastic disaster of a straw poll in 1936 that led to the creation of the scientific poll that is used today. At the time, then-President Franklin Roosevelt faced a challenge from Alf Landon, the governor of Kansas.
Across the country, the cry is heard. Let's make it a Landon slide.
A magazine called Literary Digest had been conducting straw polls for almost 2 decades at that point. They would mail out ballots to all of their subscribers and then tally the results. The magazine had a huge mailing list.
It's not just big, it's huge!
The magazine sent out about 10 million ballots in 1936, but the pool of respondents was not very diverse. They tended to be wealthy, white, and Republican.
Why are you wearing a tux?
It's after 6. What am I, a farmer?
Literary Digest was the most respected poll in the U.S. It predicted Alf Landon would defeat Roosevelt easily with 57% of the popular vote. Now, since President Landon doesn't appear in the history books, we know that poll was very, very wrong. And one guy predicted that the Literary Digest would get it wrong, a young statistician named George Gallup.
Dr. Gallup celebrates the 25th anniversary of the Gallup poll. Over the years, he has won an international reputation for measuring the public's attitude on social, political, and economic issues of the day.
Gallup had created a new method for polling that was based on survey sampling. He polled a small number of people who represented a wide range of incomes and backgrounds. Gallup used to compare survey sampling to soup.
No soup for you!
You can only know the flavor of an entire soup if you mix it thoroughly and get a big enough mouthful. You can't just scoop up one vegetable and say the soup tastes like carrots. Based on the scientific polling of only 50,000 people in 1936, Gallup correctly predicted that Roosevelt would win, and Gallup's reputation was made. That reputation was marred about 12 years later. You know that famous photograph of Harry Truman holding up a newspaper with the headline, Dewey defeats Truman? Yeah. That was Gallup's fault.
I was way off.
But the problem wasn't his scientific method. It was that his organization was so sure of the results, they stopped polling more than 3 weeks before the election. Plenty of time for a whole bunch of people to change their minds.
Undecided voters considered the most coveted voting block. This year, roughly 1 in 9 Americans haven't made up their minds.
And since we're already talking about errors, let's finally get to the margin of error that started this whole explanation.
Finally!
The margin of error in a poll refers to the chance that the group you talk to actually represents the whole population. It represents the chance that the poll is wrong and the sample doesn't represent the wider nation. The larger your sample size, the the lower the margin of error goes.
Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
So if you poll about 100 people, your margin of error is 10%. 100 people is not a lot, so there's a reasonable chance that they do not represent the 219 million eligible voters in the U.S. If you poll 2,400 people, the margin of error goes down to 2%.
Any questions?
Yes! Several! I mean...
The margin of error is the measure of how close that poll is to reality. But the margin of error can't take into account mistakes like Gallup made in 1948 when he predicted the victory of President Dewey. Any poll is just a snapshot. It's a scientific guess. And the margin of error tells us how accurate that guess is at that point in time.
Time makes us all a prisoner of the present, forever transitioning from our own past into an unknown future.
So those are the basics. Now let's get more specific information from an expert.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back those words.
Here to tell us more is Andrew Mercer. He's a senior research methodologist at the Pew Research Center. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning.
I got to ask you first if we got everything correct.
Yeah, for the most part, that's about right. You know, those are two really good examples that you raise in there. You know, the Literary Digest poll had a huge sample size. It would have had a very small margin of error, but you know, that only works if you've got a random sample. You know, and like you say, the Gallup example, it's only you know, the poll only represents what's true right now, and what's true now may not be true tomorrow.
And yet, one thing that occurs, Andrew, is that all of the polls that we see are not as good as the next, right? I mean, we see a lot of polls coming across, and people wonder, why are they so different? And that's because everyone doesn't use the same stringent methodology as everybody else, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways people do it. You know, it's not necessarily that some are better than others. I mean, some do tend to have, you know, better characteristics than others. But even, you know, minor changes like different question wordings can produce different results.
And also, I mean, one of the things that comes up all the time, and this is not reflected in, say, a margin of error, is the fact that polls have long relied on landlines, calling people on a regular phone, and that's problematic in the age of the cell phone. How problematic do you think it is?
Well, this has gotten a lot of attention. It is problematic if you're only calling landlines. But so, for instance, what we do at the Pew Research Center and what most major media organizations do is we actually call a mixture of landlines and cell phones. In fact, we call about 75% of the numbers that we call are cell phones. So this is actually a problem that has been addressed pretty well by the major people in the industry.
So then why do we hear people like Donald Trump and many of his surrogates saying that there are phony polls out there and that polls are not accurate? And then why do we see, as we did in the last election, some polls predicted a Romney victory, whereas Nate Silver was one of the few people who said it's not going to be close, and he ended up being correct. Why are polls so wrong so often?
Well, you know, the truth is people have looked into this, and they're not actually wrong as often as you'd think. One of the things that happens is that you hear about it when they're wrong, but you don't necessarily hear about all the times that you actually do get it close. You know, we pay attention to the things that are surprising, and so it's not as bad as it looks or sounds like in the media.
So we have this ABC poll that I quoted earlier that shows Hillary Clinton 1 point ahead of Donald Trump, but a 3-point margin of error. And that means that, realistically speaking, Donald Trump could be ahead if it's within that margin of error.
Yeah, I mean, that is what the margin of error means, which is, you know, if you sort of repeated this same survey 100 times, you know, 95% of the time, it would be within 3% of of the truth. So that's sort of the right understanding of what that implies.
My guest is Andrew Mercer of the Pew Research Center, and we're talking about the margin of error in polls. But here's the thing, Andrew. We were talking about how many people are polled, and there's hundreds of millions of eligible voters in the U.S. So how can you get to 95% or better accuracy if we only poll 1,200 or 2,000 of them?
Sure. So the way that works under the hood is if you know that there are 200 million voters, and you know that you want a sample of 1,000 people, what statisticians can do is they actually know the number of possible samples of 1,000 people that you could get out of all of those people. And based on that, you can actually calculate these probabilities and understand and measure just how close you are likely to be to the true result.
So then how is that different than, say, the chance of winning? And I say that because, go back to that ABC poll, because it's one of the most recent, that shows Hillary Clinton ahead by only 1 point. And yet when you go to Nate Silver's blog, which a lot of people consult, he shows Clinton with an almost 76% chance of winning. What is the difference here?
Sure. Well, there's a couple things going on there. One is that the aggregators who combine a lot of different polls, they're also combining sort of state-level polls and a lot of different pieces of information, and they have a model that they use to make their predictions, and they're sort of trying to forecast a result based on a lot of different pieces of information. One poll has a margin of error, and it's doing something a little bit different, which is, measuring what the electorate looks like right now. There's a number of different kinds of error that
can go
into that.
I'm sorry, Andrew, what does that mean, measuring what the electorate looks like right now? What does that mean?
Sure. So, for instance, if you get 1,000 voters on the phone and you ask them, who would you vote for if the election were today, what you're getting is who they support right now. And between now and next week, things could change. People could change their minds. And then the other thing that comes up is people may intend to vote now, but they don't end up voting on election day, whether because something else came up or they just decided not to. But there's a lot of reasons why what people say today may not actually perfectly reflect what happens on election day.
Which is how Gallup ended up with the Dewey defeats Truman headline.
Exactly right, yep.
But how much does that margin of error also include people not telling the truth? It has been found that sometimes people aren't honest about which candidate they support.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, that's something that people like myself worry about quite a lot. In terms of who people support, that tends to be the kind of thing that people are honest about, but that is always a worry. It's not the margin of error that you hear about really only reflects error that comes because of sort of the random selection. So that's really it. It doesn't account for other kinds of error like people not telling the truth or certain kinds of people not responding to the survey.
All right. So at this point, how much can we rely on polls? And I ask that because in so many ways, this election is exceptional. And the electorate is in some ways exceptional. So are our polls in context different than they have been in presidential elections of the past?
Well, I mean, every presidential election is unique in some respect. I guess we'll find out in a week. The hardest thing, I think, for pollsters is trying to understand who's going to vote. And there's really just no – people have a lot of different ways of doing that, but it's a really hard thing to do, and I think that's sort of the biggest challenge.
And to what extent, Andrew, do polls influence votes? And by that I mean, let's say that you're a Trump supporter, but you – in the end weren't going to go out and vote for whatever your reason may be. But then you see the chance that he may lose. And does that actually motivate? Do polls motivate people to either go to the polls or stay home?
You know, it could. I mean, that makes sense. This is a really hard thing to actually study because, you know, you can't really do an experiment where you expose some people to polls and other people to no polls and then see how they behave. So it's not something that I think people have a really good understanding of.
So what do we still have? Andrew, do you think our polls are fully accurate right now? Or are there more things that we need to tweak?
You know, I think on the whole, polls are good. You know, there's the population is always changing, society is always changing, and polls, you know, need to keep up with that. And so we always need to try to, you know, improve our methods to stay, you know, stay up to date. But you know, I think by and large, that's what people are trying to do.
Andrew Mercer is a senior research methodologist at the Pew Research Center, probably reading a lot of polls and polling a lot of people. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.